The story doesn't begin at the base of the mountain. It begins back with the opening line, the beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. And the quote from Isaiah, the introduction of John the Baptizer, and then Jesus showing up, going under the water and coming up to find the Spirit descending and the voice booming, "You are my Son, the Beloved. With you I am well pleased." That's the beginning. Back when we don't know who this guy is, but we know everything we need to know about him from that opening line. He is the Christ, the Messiah, and the Son of God. And at his baptism, God speaks directly to him, calling him Son, Beloved, and telling him just how pleased with him God is. Words every son wants to hear. So much more happens before the mountain, right? We can't get to it all. But right before they go up, Jesus is talking to his followers, right? These people fishers he sought out and gathered around him. And they're nearing the end of the first half of their journey, right? They've gathered in the north near a Greek city of Caesarea Philippi. And Jesus asks the followers who they think he is, and Peter, always the eager beaver, calls him Messiah, Christ. Bingo, right? We've heard that already. Chapter 1, verse 1, right there. And Jesus' cryptic response is to tell Peter to tell nobody. But then Jesus begins to speak to the rest of the group, not about riding to Jerusalem like a new King David, right? An idea which definitely would have lit Peter up like a Christmas tree, right? It would have fit his expectations. And not unlike the expectations many have today of those who expect Jesus to come back in a cloud the same way, raining down terror upon his enemies. Instead, Jesus says that he's going to suffer and die. Peter, whose mind is probably blown by this idea, because that's not what messiahs do, right, pulls Jesus aside to rebuke him, maybe knock some sense into him, kind of like the best man to the groom when he's talking crazy, right? But Jesus isn't talking crazy. He's the one who does get the stakes. So he calls Peter Satan and tells him to get behind him. And then he tells the crowd about the stakes of following behind him. Sacrifice. And all your attempts to protect your life will ensure that you lose it. And the next verse, after all this stuff, tells us that 6 days later, Jesus leads Peter, James, and John up a mountain. Like setting up a divine experience. They're going to church, right, for the Sabbath. And it's here, up this mountain, and for those three and for the nine left at the bottom, and for us in between, when we all get lost. Right, this isn't a test, but his students are failing anyway, because they aren't listening to the teacher. But it would be arrogant of us to blame them, because we fail here too. Because what awaits these three disciples on the mountain is a true spectacle, right? The kind of moment to which all mountaintop experiences should be based, right? White light so bright it makes bleached sheets look yellow. Right? Visions. Confirmation that Jesus is the real deal, right? All of this up this mountain. And even that same voice, the return of the voice of God, injects into the story like a lightning bolt. It sounds the same, but it's different. Listen to that voice. Close your eyes and listen. Right last time, it spoke to Jesus, and this time God speaks to the three disciples. "This is my Son, the Beloved. Listen to him." God does not say, look at this display of power, or build a tabernacle. God says, listen. And that word in here translated as dwellings is the same word used for the tabernacle, same thing used, remember, back for the Ark of the Covenant, which we hold God and carry God with us on our journey. The beginning of the good news of Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Stop talking, listen. He's telling you how to follow him. You only think you're lost. Your guide is right in front of you, and suddenly the spectacle is gone, and only Jesus remains. And they walk down the mountain in silence. Awaiting them at the bottom of the mountain, we don't get to this, the lectionary cuts it off, but the disciples that are left behind have screwed up a healing and are being harassed by scribes. And soon after this, they'll argue over who is the best. And soon after that, James and John will ask to be Jesus' co-number twos. They aren't listening. Peter, James, and John, the three who go up the mountain, prove they aren't listening. None of the disciples are. Those three thought they were special, better. They weren't listening before, and they're failing to listen now. Like so many generations ago, when those Hebrew people who are wandering around in the desert send Moses up the mountain to commune with God, another mountaintop experience, right? And when he's gone for 40 days, the people freak out, right? And they mold this golden calf for worship. I mean, I suppose you'd have to be there to make sense of it, right? I think that this golden calf thing was a good idea. I mean, I suppose they were probably like, it's been 4 or 5 weeks, so let's find a new god. I mean, I guess they ran out of time or something, got bored. How long are they supposed to wait, 40 days? Seriously, it's not like we're going to be out here for 40 years or something. But these mountaintops, and the people left behind, these aren't rational moments that they're experiencing. These aren't grand depictions of how things should be every day. These aren't good decision-making times. They aren't our means of returning to former glory either. We don't make an idol of our days of greatness and preserve that in a box like the Ark of the Covenant and carry it around with us, right? Like putting on old clothes, buying a sports car, and blasting classic rock brings back the glory days, right? We just look foolish. Listen. We're lost. Listen for his voice. He's trying to tell us that we already know the way. He's already told us he's going to Jerusalem, and soon he'll meet his maker. This Wednesday, we'll enter into a season of listening. And we might feel lost or confused or out of sync with the world around us. But that's par for the course with Jesus. Before going up the mountain, he said, if any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it. And for those who lose their life for my sake and for the sake of the gospel will save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Listen, it takes sacrifice. Not measuring each other's sacrifice or comparing our sacrifice with our neighbors, right? The sacrifice of the cross, of power and status and security and being best and greatest at everything. Giving up a love of winning, of greatness and glory, and throwing that into the fire. like one more of our idols. Because this, the superiority, right? Emotional, spiritual, intelligent superiority, that's our golden calf, crafted in arrogance and impatience. Jesus is walking to Jerusalem, and we're called to follow him, listening, avoiding the mesmerizing spectacles and temptations to condemn our neighbors to the hell of our making. We listen to him, listen to his voice, telling us to love, make peace, show mercy, and seek reconciliation. Listen with longing and hope, and the one true certainty we have that this is the beginning of the good news. This is the beginning of the good news. This is the beginning, the good news. Jesus Christ, the Son of God. A path of love and mercy straight into hell. And on the third day, we overcome it. We rise, reborn, like stardust.